You're listening to this week's excerpt from the Dear Prudence podcast. To get the full-length members-only version every week, join Slate Plus at slate.com/prudypod.
Dear Prudence.
Do you think that I should contact him again?
Thanks.
Welcome back to the Dear Prudence Show once again, and as always, I am your host, Dear Prudence, also known as Mallory Ortberg. With me in the studio today is Rachel Tibbetts, who is a listener who wanted to be on the show, who emailed me, and I said, yeah, come on the show. And I need to take a minute and apologize. We're recording back-to-back today, so the episode you all listened to last week with Anna Pulley, I really ribbed her about bringing in handwritten notes, like an old-timey stenographer, and then here Rachel comes in with yet again handwritten notes. So I take it all back. Handwritten notes are now the norm. I will expect them from all future guests. They're fabulous. I also just want to let listeners know, again, even though these podcast episodes are separated for you by a week apart, for me, they were separated by about 20 minutes. And I finally couldn't stand having run out of nicotine gum this morning. I just went out and started smoking cigarettes. So
I'm expecting you to be very relaxed and prepared.
Oh, I'm something, man. So I got to, tomorrow I'm going to have to quit again and we're going to restart the countdown clock. I will get the hang of this, but everyone just bear in mind that among other things, the person giving you advice cannot fucking quit cigarettes. So feel free to ignore me all the time.
I'm just going to accept you with compassion.
Oh, that doesn't sound like very good idea.
Because shaming is so effective.
I mean, look, I'm doing plenty of it over here. It's not good. It's not good to smoke cigarettes. I don't recommend it. But boy, oh boy, does it feel fantastic.
Yeah.
That is not a recommendation, listeners.
Oh, no, no.
Yeah.
I tried cigarettes once.
Didn't take?
I collapsed at a musical rehearsal in high school because, I bought them on my 18th birthday.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow. You, like, waited and did it
legally.
Oh,
I went to the store and I did it on the birthday. Oh. And then I had to be on an inhaler.
Oh, no.
And I was like, these are not for me.
I'm so sorry that you had that experience.
But I'm happy because I had no chance to become addicted at all. It was
if you were doing high school theater, the odds that you were going to become a serious smoker really goes up.
Yes. And all of my friends in theater smoked. And so, and of course, I went and I bought Camels. I bought like hard, nothing, none of this menthol flavored stuff.
No. You went straight
in. Go big or go home.
Just like, what did Humphrey Bogart smoke? Give it to me.
Pretty much. Give me the ones without the filter, you know?
You got filters?
No, I didn't.
Oh,
I didn't.
Okay. I was going to say, that is hardcore.
But yeah.
All right. Let's stop promoting cigarettes on this show. We don't do that. It's not good. You shouldn't. Let's jump right into the questions that people have about being alive, which is a very hard thing to do, to be alive.
Very, very difficult and fraught.
I'm so tired all the time.
Some of these letters, man.
Yeah. Some of these letters. All right. So the first one, the subject line is just like Dad. Dear Prudence, our father left us after a long-term affair with a family friend. It devastated our mother, and we were forced to move from our family home into a tiny apartment. The same thing later happened to me, but I was lucky enough to have found out before I married the guy. These have given me significant trust issues. Infidelity is a sign of no moral character to me, whether you're married or not. I don't think cheaters are good people. Now, my sister is one. She is sleeping in my guest room, pregnant, and mooning over her quote-unquote lover. He went back to his wife and kids. Sometimes I think she was hit in the head. She doesn't see the connection between what she did and what our father did to us or my ex did to me. These are not the same things because this is true love and I just don't understand. She isn't focusing on the fact that she's going to have a baby and has no job or help. Her roommates don't want her back and right now she's living in my 2-bedroom condo while I pay for everything. My sister isn't a teenager. She's 25 with a college degree. Half the time I want to slap her because of how stupid and selfish I think she's acting. I want to scream at her that she's exactly like our former stepmother or my faithless friend. I want her to act like an adult and get ready to take care of this baby. I know I'm not being rational, but listening to her excuses and self-pity makes me want to take a shower. She's still my little sister, and I'm all that she has. Our mother has retired to Florida, and I can't expect that my father is going to do anything of worth. I'm trapped.
Oh, I feel trapped listening to this letter,
yeah,
right?
She's just...
There's so much.
There's so... The weight.
It's a big weight.
And it's the... She doesn't
feel allowed to be angry at this.
Yeah.
You are allowed to be angry.
Yep.
It's bad. And you're allowed to have that feeling. And that's not wrong. And it's funny because, like, she hasn't done anything wrong. I'm putting a gender on this. I'm feeling like this is one. But the hasn't done anything wrong and feels trapped, you know. And so I really felt like there's this, well, I'm all she has. And she's 25. She's been through college. You don't have to do this.
Right. She also has herself.
Yeah.
There's that kind of implicit, my mom and dad are here, so aren't here in certain ways. So I'm all she has. But, like, she has her.
Yeah.
You're not her parent. She's not 15.
Yeah.
She has herself. And she may not have a lot of close friends right now, or she may not have an extended social network, but she is not without recourse in this world.
Yeah. And she needs to be there for herself pretty soon, because there's going to be another self who's entirely dependent on her pretty soon. And it's like, but for the reader, I really want to focus on the reader and be like, you feel trapped by this situation because of the baby. Mm-hmm. That's like this whole extra complication, and you're trying to serve this baby, but you're not under an obligation. And if it's making you upset and it's putting you on the spot, and it's also abusive to, like, move in and just expect someone else to pay for all of the bills.
It's certainly lousy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's certainly thoughtless and selfish. And I, you know, clearly her sister is going through some kind of a crisis.
Yeah.
But, you know, in addition to the pain the letter writer feels because her sister is in the situation that has brought so much pain to their family and to the letter writer's own, you know, almost marriage.
Yeah.
There's the additional, you're not even acting like a baby is coming.
Yeah.
And you have no plan. And I think part of what's so hard is, like, in addition to all the swirling, this brings up feelings about our own father and my own failed marriage or almost marriage, is the sense of, when are you going to leave? Because I got to say, your sister's not going to get more self-reliant when there's a baby in the house. I can tell you that.
Absolutely. And so I sort of was just like, you know, she's overstepped your boundary.
Yeah.
You have a boundary about infidelity and she's overstepped it and come into your home. And so I feel like for the reader needs to...
Sorry, when you say the reader, who do you mean?
Sorry, the writer.
Writer. Oh, okay.
I'm the reader.
Okay.
She's the writer, not me. Her. Is like, you can reestablish a boundary. If she's overstepped this boundary, then what's your I can't even think of the word, deal breaker.
Yeah. Well, and that's not to say too that, like, just because your sister did something that was, you know, selfish or unkind to a pre-existing family. And of course, you know, the guy is super culpable in all of this. But it's also okay for you to say, I don't approve of what my sister did.
Yeah.
And, you know, beyond that, it does not necessarily mean that you are being cruel or judging or punishing her by saying, I am not going to, you know, make all these decisions for you. I'm not going to foot the bills. I'm not going to allow you to not make decisions by just deferring them all to me. Like,
exactly.
That's a reasonable boundary to draw.
Yeah.
And I know you say you feel like torn between, I want to slap her, but then I'm also letting her stay on my couch and letting her not make any decisions. And, like, there's something in the middle.
Exactly.
In between of those two things. And that is, you know, pick a move out date.
Yep.
And stick to it.
And you say you want her to act like an adult, and you can give her opportunities. You can say, I need you to get a job and contribute financially. If you're going
to
stay
frankly,
here.
Frankly, it doesn't sound like you want her to stay there.
No.
And I don't think that she should. There are, you know, if she's going to require financial assistance, there are programs that she can apply for. If she wants to look for a job, I know it's very difficult to get hired when you're pregnant, but, you know, she can tap her network of resources. If she wants to consider getting child support from this guy, then she can do that.
Yeah.
Which, you know, may have the unfortunate side effect of blowing up his current family situation. But this child is entitled to, you know, a good start in life. And this child is entitled to financial support from both parents.
Yeah.
That's why it's called child support and not parent of the child support. Like, it's for the child. So she has options.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you can encourage her to pursue them. And if she doesn't pursue them, she will get to make choices as a result of those consequences. Like, I promise you, I think sometimes with a family member like this, who sort of has that learned helplessness of
yes.
like, I know if I just kind of collapse onto your couch and don't make any choices, you will get so worried about me that you will do it for me.
You will spoon soup into my mouth.
That kind of person never lets themselves get into too dire straits. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
I can feel in your letter this sense of, my mom's far away, my dad's no good. If I don't do this, my sister will end up in the gutter. Your sister's not going to end up in the gutter. She's got options.
She's
got
shown
abilities.
That she's adept at making sure she's taken care of, and that's not going to go away.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, that's not to say, like, legally, you should find out, depending on how long she's been staying with you, she may qualify for certain tenants' rights.
Yeah.
And you should find out what those are, and you should let her know whatever, you know, however many days written notice she is entitled to in the state that you live in before she has to move out.
Yeah.
You can give it to her. I'm sure there will be a contingent of people who will say something like, how could you throw a pregnant woman out into the streets?
She's banking on that.
You know, it may also be that you are willing to wait. You know, you are willing to give her like 6 months or something along those lines. That's totally your call.
Yeah.
Give her enough time to make alternate arrangements, certainly. But that's not your problem. Like, if you died tomorrow, she would have to figure all of these things out.
Yeah.
And you did not commit to raising a child with your sister. So this is not on you that she has no plan.
Yeah. And that's, yeah. So.
Yeah, I know this is hard. This is a hard situation. I don't think that you should slap your sister. I don't think that you should say, you know, this is the culmination of everyone who's ever hurt me in your life.
Yeah.
I think you can just say, I really wish you hadn't gotten involved with this guy. Now that the baby is coming, I really encourage you to get a plan. And I wish you the absolute best of luck. But your plan can't be that I take care of everything.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen. That's not going to work for me, and I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
And that's going to, it sounds like, be really difficult, because it sounds like she is just planning on doing this indefinitely.
Yeah. And the whole, he's gone back to his wife and kids, but she's still saying it's true love, feels like either she's not accepting the reality,
right,
or she's deflecting.
Right. And whatever that is, I just don't think it's going to be useful for you to get drawn into a conversation about whether or not that relationship is a good one for her. Like, don't litigate that with her.
Yeah.
It's just not important.
Yeah.
You two do not see eye to eye on it. And you are not going to be able to convince her that this guy is not interested in committing and being honest and responsible towards her. Because I don't know what clearer signal you can give someone than getting them pregnant and then going back to your wife and other children.
Yeah.
Of like, this is not a good guy.
Yeah. And you can divorce it totally. You can just be like, I just can't have you here regardless.
Right. Yeah. And you can just absolutely say, you can file for child support. You are legally entitled to it. Do what you got to do. But find your limit, you know, and whatever you feel like, okay, I can't do this because she's my sister. I cannot just give her 30 days notice and throw her out completely. I understand that. I do. I really do. And so I would say, figure out what's the longest amount of time you're willing to let her live in your home. And then do that, because I promise you, she is not going to come to you and say, thank you so much. I have found an apartment. Really appreciated the time that you gave me.
Yeah.
It's all set up. I have a nursery and everything. I'm moving out. It's going to have to come from you.
Yeah.
And she's going to fight it.
Yeah. And she's going to lean on a
lot. And she's going to guilt you.
Yeah.
And she's going to use the fact that she's pregnant
yeah.
and the fact that, you know, you have always babied her, it sounds like, as a reason for why you should continue to act like her mom. And that's
You're not her
not
mom.
Your problem. You're not. And like, adults have unexpected pregnancies all the time. And they get in really confusing and painful emotional and financial situations. And there are options and help. And, you know, you both have options that are not just let this go on forever.
And if you need support with your boundary, like, reach out to support yourself and your
yeah.
decision.
Yeah.
If you need someone to hold your hand while you say this to her,
yeah.
get that.
Absolutely. You know, you say that you're trapped, and it's just, I feel a lot of sympathy for you. That sounds really, really awful.
Yeah.
And I just want you to know, you are not. You
nope.
are not responsible for your sister's well-being. It is not cruel of you to say, you cannot live with me forever. It is not cruel of you to say, I am not going to co-parent your child with you. Like, that's just... That's actually a perfectly reasonable thing to say to a sibling.
Totally.
Woo! Okay, so just more sibling. Oh, God, so many family dynamics today.
I actually made a note that there was a lot of family dynamics and
yeah.
emotional
yeah.
scarcity problems.
Yes! Okay, so go ahead and take this next letter.
Me. Oh my God, this is called Subject House. Dear Prudence, I am the only one of my siblings who did not depend on my parents to pay for my adult years. The Army funded my college. I haven't been married or have children yet. My siblings got their education paid for by my parents. My sister got over 15 grand for her wedding. My parents bought my brother a van when my niece was born and let his family and him live rent-free with them for 6 years. I am not jealous. I love my siblings and my nieces and do not begrudge them any help my parents have to offer them. Only they don't want to extend the same courtesy to me. I am finally ready to settle down and stop renting, but house prices have skyrocketed in the area I live in. I asked my parents for help with the down payment. It was enough that I will be able to pay off my mortgage in 10 years. Only now, both my siblings will not stop going on how my parents bought me a house or complain about how they wish they could move. I have joked with them, asked them to stop, and finally pointed out that they both got a lot more financial assistance from my parents than I ever did. My brother snapped that our parents were glad to help him out, and I pointed out that they were also glad to help me. He apologized, but things are still cool between us. My sister has doubled down to the point of being ridiculous. The house is a sign of my being the favorite. I point she got 15 grand for her one-day event, and that doesn't count because it's traditional, and I am jealous. My parents have told us all in so many words, grow up, figure it out, and they are going to be spending Christmas in Hawaii this year.
Bless your parents. Good for them.
Right?
I hope they have a great time in Hawaii.
Right? The first, like, Yeah.
And it's just always such a brutal reminder, letters like this, that, like, you can be so generous to your kids, and they will all still find a way to keep score and squabble and work out their jealousies and grudges with each other based on everyone's gifts.
Here's what's killing me. They're not mad at the parents.
Right?
The parents made these financial decisions, not your sibling.
Yeah.
And yet, why are you mad at the sibling? Why would you bring it, why not bring it up to the parents?
I mean, to be clear, you mean the siblings who are mad at the letter writer.
Exactly.
We're not mad at you, letter writer.
No, you.
We got your back, letter writer.
Yeah.
We're on your side.
And this idea of just like, oh, you're the favorite. And part of me is like, well, if you're the favorite now, is someone thinking they were the favorite before? Is there some sort of like, I feel like they don't love me the same because I'm keeping score kind of thing?
I gotta say, I feel like the dynamic that I read here is one that I've seen sometimes, which is sometimes the most self-reliant sibling. Actually, the other siblings all really resent because they feel an implicit comparison and they feel a form of guilt about all the help they've received, but they don't like to think of themselves as not self-reliant. So they find reasons or excuses why the gifts they've received doesn't count. And then if anything good or you know, extra or spontaneous or generous happens to the really self-reliant sibling, they all seize upon that.
Yeah. And be like, oh, look at what you got. You got that thing. And so that was somehow undeserved or somehow extra.
Yeah. No.
But I find it odd that it's not against the parents that they're not talking about the parental decision because that's obviously what it's their money.
Yeah.
They can give it to whom they choose at the time that they choose. And there's also nothing here saying that, like, if these other siblings chose to buy a house, that they would not necessarily receive financial assistance.
Yeah. I got to say, I think your way forward with this one is just, you know, you've already kind of had it out with your brother. I think it was just all your siblings. If they bring it up, say, you know what? If it bothers you, talk to mom and dad. I'm done.
Yep.
It's over. It happened. I'm really grateful that I get to live in a house. I do not want to discuss this again, and I won't.
Yep.
And you got to hold that, right? Like, and that's the sort of thing where you just make it really clear. We're not re-arguing this. We're not reopening this argument again. And if they do, you just get to say, I told you I'm not going to talk about it. I'm willing to talk about anything else with you, but if you can't let this go, I'm going to walk away.
That's what I had. They bring it up. I'm not engaging on this topic.
Yeah. And you know, yeah, frankly, follow your parents' lead on this one. Like, they've got a pretty solid approach, which is just like, let it go, friends.
Yeah.
Yeah. The deed is done. We're all doing fine. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, all of you have families and homes and jobs and something in your life that's valuable. You all seem stable and well. It's like, who is suffering here?
Yeah.
Who doesn't have enough right now?
And nothing's been taken from anyone.
Right.
It's emotion. There's a lot of emotion, obviously.
No, it's just like that little kid thing of, you have something. I have to have the equal thing now. It's like, no, you don't. You're fine.
Everything's good. No one is, it doesn't sound like anyone's any straight. They'd say, I'd like to move, but not I'm being evicted or I'm having financial trouble or.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I would say tell your parents to have a fabulous time in Hawaii. that you're still extremely grateful for the financial help they gave you with your house. And do something fun that you think you would enjoy for Christmas.
Yeah.
And tell your siblings, I love you, and knock it off. And if they don't knock it off, take a lot of space.
Yep. Just disengage, walk away, be like, I'm not.
Yep. I hope you figure out a way to work this out, friend. And if you need to talk to mom and dad about it, I wish you the best. But you and I are done talking about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Spite is not a good look.
It's not on anybody. And keeping score in emotional relationships and families is not a good look.
No, especially when it's just like, these are such lucky kids. Like,
exactly.
That their parents were able to drop 15 grand on a wedding? Are you kidding? That they were able to turn a 30-year mortgage into a 10-year mortgage?
Right?
This is a very materially lucky family.
Yeah, and I think about the parents that they're being generous. They're doing the thing.
They're doing so much.
And seeing that their children
reacting. I hope your parents stop spending money on, frankly, all of you. Like, just, I hope they just start.
They are. They're going to
Hawaii. Yeah, good for them. Like, I hope they just enjoy their retirement.
Next year, Aruba, man.
And, man, congratulations on you for just, like, you know, being able to have a really self-sufficient life. It sounds like that's been meaningful to you and it's meant a lot to you and that's great. And I hope that your siblings can stop acting like you're all, you know, 8 years old fighting over who's got the, like, red cup today or whatever.
Yeah. Just be happy for each
you
other.
Guys, yeah. You guys are doing really well. Let it, like, and there's not even like, oh, someone's clearly the favorite and been getting a ton. Like,
everybody's gotten something.
It's one
meaningful.
Of those things where everyone has so much, but they're acting like they're threatened or about to have something taken away from them. And I just have a hard time relating to that.
Everybody take a deep breath.
You're doing great. Yeah, letter writer. Sorry, a lot of that was addressed at your siblings, not you as well, because it doesn't sound like you've been participating in that same thing so much. But yeah, man, I just cannot imagine being at a point in my life where someone would say, you know, your parents gave you $15,000 for something, and my response being, it doesn't count.
Because it's traditional.
Like, I don't know what neighborhood you grew up in. But it is not traditional for parents to just hand out $15,000 on your wedding day.
Yeah, that's a chunk of change.
That
for
is
a day?
Ooh. Yeah. I mean, I encourage her to reexamine the orientation of her heart. And just if you ever find yourself saying $15,000 doesn't count, don't do that. That's bad.
Yeah.
You're mistaken. It does.
Take a step back and look at the entire world and realize exactly how much it counts.
It is a lot of money.
Oh, man.
All right. So.
Oh, I had words for this person.
Oh, very excited. All right. Read the letter and then give me all of your unvarnished thoughts.
Subject: my ex is getting remarried weeks after our divorce. What do I tell the kids? Dear Prudence, my ex-husband Roger and I will be officially divorced in a month, although our marriage has been over for almost a year. In 6 weeks, Roger plans on marrying his mistress and true love, Natalie. We have 3 young children, ages 8, 5, and 4. Roger is eager for Natalie to meet them, and he obviously wants our kids at the wedding. I've done a lot of the emotional heavy lifting since Roger left, because he prefers to keep his time with them fun and exciting. Oh, man.
I don't normally interrupt letters, but I had to make that sound.
I'm unsure how to prepare my children for their father's remarriage when they're just coming to terms with our divorce. I don't want my children to see my bitterness towards their dad and know how it's killing me that I have to share them with Natalie. I read your column enough to know I should be thankful for a stepmother who wants the kids around. But if I leave Roger to talk to them about his marriage to Natalie, it's entirely possible he won't. My parents and friends think I should keep the children from the wedding, but that could get ugly real fast. And in the end, they'll have to face their dad's new family. What should I do?
Oh, Roger.
Oh, Roger. So,
can you do me a favor, letter writer? Just give me 5 minutes on the phone with Roger. Just 5 minutes on the phone. Private. No one else needs to know what the two of us talk about. I would really appreciate that. I would consider it a personal favor.
Oh, man.
Roger, what the hell, man?
Stop carrying Roger's water. He prefers to keep his time with them fun and exciting, a.k.a. he makes you do all the emotional labor of dealing with the divorce.
And all the parenting, so that he can be fun.
He's
weekend
the
dad.
Fun parent, and you're the one who makes him do their homework and eat their Brussels sprouts. Brussels sprouts are delicious, so that's a good thing.
Whatever you need. Whatever
oh,
you
my
need.
Word. So I am, like, so proud of you, letter writer. Being like, I'm trying not to show my bitterness. I'm trying to appreciate this woman who wants my children in their life.
Right.
Like, you are doing so much work.
Right.
Roger needs to work now. And that, I think, yes, they should go to their father's wedding.
Yep.
And this is Roger's job to get them ready. If you've done all the other stuff, this is his job. Because you can't take this load forever.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really, I actually wrote down, you can make a plan for this. You can sit down with Roger and Natalie and look at them mm-hmm. and be like, you're a unit. You're the ones getting married. You make a plan for how you're going to deal with this.
Right.
And if you need a therapist there to help you all figure this out.
Right.
But you get to be the
mediator who helps yeah. with your custody agreement. Lots of people get those.
Exactly. And to be like, you know, this is how, this is a way to broach it. If you don't know how to figure out how to talk about it, get a professional to help you figure out how to talk about it.
Yeah.
But this idea that how he prefers his time to be with his children, that mm-hmm. would be nice if I could prefer my time with my children to always be fun.
Sure. Who among us would not?
Yeah. So, no, I just, the fact is that he's getting married in 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And his kids haven't met his fiance yet.
Right.
So, huh?
Yeah.
What is?
And I think the tricky thing for you, letter writer, is going to be, I think your instincts to not unload any of your quite justifiable bitterness and frustration with Roger on your kids is a really good one. Because even though a lot of the stuff that he has done is just straight up awful, it does not help your kids
yeah.
to hear their mom say those things about their dad.
Yeah.
So on that side, I commend you. On the other hand, I do not think that it is going to be helpful for you to try to make up for Roger's obvious shortcomings as yep. a co-parent. I think you can do the best you can with your own kids.
Mm-hmm.
And when there's stuff that you see him dropping the ball on, because you love your kids, because you're a good parent, you're going to be tempted to run and dive and pick up those balls and juggle them.
Yep.
And I think that you should be very judicious about the ways in which you try to shield your children from their father's limitations.
Absolutely.
Because I don't think that you're going to be... I think that's a superhuman task, frankly. And your kids are just going to figure their dad out more and more.
Yep.
So obviously there's going to be certain things that I can understand why you would want to protect them from. But, you know, if you communicate, whether with a mediator present or not, to Roger and Natalie, like, if you guys need the children with you on the day of your wedding, I will make sure to drop them off at wherever you need them. Beyond that, it's up to you. I will not be in attendance.
Yep.
So I encourage you to come up with a plan.
Yeah.
But don't try to help them with their plan. Don't try to fix the plan.
If the plan is a bad plan or fails, that is Roger and Natalie's opportunity to step in
right.
and adapt. But yeah, it's hard because I read a lot of things about people seeing their ex-partner, co-parent fail and the impact on the children, but knowing that understanding who their parents are is important for
right.
the children.
Right. And the best thing you can do for your children is to be the best possible mom for them. But you can't be both their mom and half their dad of
exactly.
like making up wherever he falls short. So I think, you know, not sharing those frustrations with them is important. But it's also important, like, to have a therapist that you can see for some time a week where you get to fall apart and be really angry.
Exactly.
Because really petty.
You do have this bitterness and you do have these feelings.
I have it. And I just read about it.
I want to scream about Roger.
I do not like him. And I have some questions about Natalie's judgment.
Mm-hmm. But that, yeah, you are absolutely entitled to emotional support for you, not for your children, for you. At this time, like your personal oxygen mask to get these feelings out, to process them, to understand that they're normal and they're a normal, healthy brain reaction. And that, yeah, you don't have to do his job for him because you're worried about your kids not getting the best.
Yeah. And this really seems like a situation where having a mediator to help you with your child care or your child custody agreement, I think that will be so helpful.
Yes.
Because it sounds like you two have not been able to come to a mutually satisfactory arrangement. It sounds like he's been able to take advantage of you and you're terrified at the thought of ceding control. And
yeah.
that's not a good situation for either of you guys. And I think if you just go in with the clear goal of, I would like to be civil and I would mm-hmm. like to be able to coordinate our respective schedules
yep.
and to have a general sense of what the other one is doing. That's it. That's my goal for a co-parenting relationship.
There it goes.
Is not active hostility. And I don't try to do too much to make up for his limitations.
Yep.
And I think those are very reasonable goals. And you should not go in with the goal of, I need to become friendly with Natalie someday. I need to think well of the two of them. You do not have to do that
no.
at all.
You can appreciate Natalie's care for your children
right.
without having to make her into your BFF.
And I'm just so sorry. Like, I cannot imagine the kind of pain that must arise from not only the loss of your own marriage, which it sounds like you're pretty resigned to at this point, but this revelation that your husband is so thoughtless about his own children that he is marrying a woman in 6 weeks that he has not bothered to introduce them to.
He's only going to have been legally divorced for 2 weeks.
And that, like, he thinks they're going to have a good time. What the hell, man?
Is going on here? And you know, she caveats, oh, you know, our marriage has been over for almost a year. Well, in that almost a year, he hasn't broached the subject.
Right. And, like, yeah, that just hasn't come up. He's just spending all his time separately. He sees his kids and they get, like, boba once a week. And then it's back to, you know, true love's tower with Natalie.
I find it fascinating that she does, in parentheses, adds his mistress and true love.
Natalie. Yeah, you are really working to explain why it's kind of okay that he did this.
Now, Natalie, she's not bad. And, well, he loves her. And it's like,
you can't stand in the way of true love.
You don't have to seed that.
Yeah.
It's just that's who he's with now.
Yep. Yeah. She doesn't have to be anything other than that's his new wife. You don't have to worry about whether or not true love or soulmates is a thing. Or I'm sure it might in some ways feel better like, oh, well, they're true loves. And obviously it's messy, but you can't stand in the way. Like, it just sucks. What he did and is doing sucks.
Yeah.
And all you can do is, like, suckiness mitigation right now.
And, you know, yeah. And she, to a certain extent, also has some suckiness because she engaged in an affair with a married person. Like,
yeah, although, I mean, Roger is just so clearly, like, the man of the hour here. I'm not too mad at Natalie, although, yeah, if Natalie wrote to me, I would have some questions about, like, what is this guy's character as he is revealing it to you? Like,
we're getting married in 6 weeks and I haven't met his three kids yet.
Yeah. Cool.
Oh, huh?
Cool.
Yeah. On the last point of, like, my parents and friends think I should keep the children from the wedding. Don't do that.
Yeah. Don't listen to them.
Nope.
Your parents and friends, part of their job when you go through a divorce like this is to hate the motherfucker who hurt you.
Exactly.
And that can be really nice and therapeutic in small doses when you are, like, having a cry session on the couch.
Exactly.
But when it comes to parenting your children, don't take that into account.
Yep. That's that bitterness you're trying to keep away from them.
Yep.
That follow that instinct.
Yep.
Send them, spit on their cowlick, make them look good. And...
Oh, I thought you meant, like, spit on Roger.
You gotta fix that flyaway.
Yep, and that's going to be a hard line to walk between, like, not lying to your children in order to make their dad look like a better person, but also seeing them be disappointed in their dad is going to be really hard. And the best thing you can do, I think, is to be a really good mother. Like, if they say, I don't understand why we haven't met Natalie, oh, God, that's just such a painful conversation.
Do they even know Natalie exists?
I don't, like, that's part of what scares me. Do they know their dad's getting married at all?
I don't think they do, because... But if leave him to talk to them about his marriage, like...
I just can't imagine.
Yeah.
Roger, you need to call me.
We want to hear your side here, Roger.
Oh,
what's
I don't
want
to hear shit from you, Roger. I want to tell you some stuff. This is not like a Mr. Darcy situation where he's going to be like, by the way, Mr. Wickham secretly tried to take advantage of my sister or whatever. There's not a version of events where he looks good.
Yeah.
Yeah, Roger, you owe me a phone call, guy.
Seriously. You're going to need to take it.
But yeah, good luck. I'm so sorry. This is such a hard, complicated situation. I would say my primary points are you deserve a therapist.
Absolutely.
You should get a mediator to help you guys hammer out the details of your child care agreement. And saying things like he prefers to keep his time with them fun and exciting, don't say things like that on his behalf anymore. I get Mm-mm. it. I get that you're trying to make the best of a really bad situation. I think a better thing to say is, that doesn't work for me. Here's what does.
Yep.
Like when he tries to say things like, oh, I'd sure rather play tennis on Thursdays than pick up the kids from school.
Well, I mean...
That doesn't work for me.
Yeah, it doesn't work for me. I prefer if you broach the subject of our parents divorcing to our children. No.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's... He prefers to keep things fun and exciting because he prefers not to really parent his children.
Yeah.
And that's really sad. And I hope that he snaps out of it or gets better. I assume he did not always used to be this emotionally absent a father. But maybe, frankly, maybe he did. Maybe he has always been this way. I don't know. But I'm really glad that you don't have to stay married to this guy.
I was thinking you're well shut of him.
Man.
Just, whew.
Roger. Oh, man. All right. So this last one is, I kind of feel like this is like early stage Roger, actually, that we're looking at.
Oh, this is early stage Roger.
This is more of the sort of like husband who just wants to keep things light. you know?
Yeah.
I just want to have fun. I just want to have a good time. I'm just busy. And it just makes more sense for all of the work to fall on you because your career was never as important as mine. And then weird how that kind of just picks up steam. And then your career never becomes the priority in our marriage because we picked mine as the one that mattered 10 years ago.
Yep.
And so now you're just stuck.
Well, now you make less than me, so...
Your schedule's already more flexible because my job was more important. So let's keep making mine more important and constantly downgrade yours.
And then... When I inevitably leave you, you won't be able to support yourself.
Or, like, when you inevitably leave me, when the kids are out of the house, and I'm like, what? I thought we were a team.
All right, let's read it. All right, Proto-Roger. Let's see if we can prevent a Roger from happening.
Oh, I would love that. We're going to save you, baby Roger.
Subject. Is it fair to ask my busy husband to do more? Dear Prudence, my husband and I both work full-time and are raising a 5-year-old girl. I'm running into the issue where it's always assumed that I will take off work for whatever home kid emergency pops up. Meet the plumber or electrician, daughter is sick, parent-teacher conference. No matter the situation, I'm always the one who takes off work to handle it. I admittedly have a more flexible schedule. He's at the executive level, while I'm middle management who runs a small office. But I know his bosses have always encouraged him to take time off and never had a problem when he does take time. Is it fair to ask that he step up even though he's busier and it's relatively easy for me to take the time? I'm just tired of taking care of everything, and I actually do have a job to do, and I'm worried my bosses will eventually get mad at me always taking time off. But when I've brought it up before, he points out to schedule packed with meetings and projects saying he doesn't have a choice.
This
okay, baby Roger.
Such insidious bullshit.
Ooh, the second shift.
Hey, tell us about the second shift,
won't
you?
The second shift, I am a full-time, I work full-time in an office, and my husband is a stay-at-home dad. And the second shift is when you're a full-time mom, and you go home, and you still have the lion's share, or the lioness's share,
nice.
Of the homework, of the dishes, of the kid stuff, of the laundry, of all of that domestic work. And so...
But honey, I thought you liked doing those things.
Nobody likes doing those things. I like not having piles of dirty laundry. Not to say that I work the second shift, but I know what it is. Is it fair? And he doesn't have a choice. Yes, you do. You always have a choice. And if he is bothering to tell you, my bosses encourage me to take time off, and then he doesn't do that, like, that's contradictory. You know, but you need to ask.
And not only are you saying you know his bosses encourage him to take more time off, you also are aware that you're close to a point where your bosses are going to notice how much time you're taking off.
Exactly.
Like, literally the message he is getting at work is, it's okay, take time to take care of your children. And you are very close to getting in trouble at work. Because you say, you letter writer, you already, like, downgrade your own job to us so much in this letter. Like, admittedly, my schedule is more flexible. Our office is small. I'm just middle management. But, like, you're running the office. Like, you're in a small office. And when you are not there, things don't work. You need to be there. Your job also matters.
Yeah.
And it matters if you get fired.
Flat out. And to me, it's like one of those things can be... I'm worried my bosses will eventually get mad at me. So not necessarily they've given her a sign, but she's feeling anxiety.
Yeah.
And it's like, you if you look at your partner and you say, and I don't know if you said this to your partner, but it's like, I'm feeling this anxiety. I want you to help me feel better and feel safer and more secure. Like,
and to feel like you value my career. Yeah. We have really established which one of us makes more money. I get it, honey. Like, we have very clearly, like, build a chart of important job and less important job, and I know where I fall on that ranking.
Yeah.
But that does not mean that your job always comes first and mine is always an afterthought.
Yeah.
And here's the deal. The very fact that you are framing this as asking your husband to do more work, like, this bullshit is right up
there.
Is
this
with
a guy
people.
Who says he babysits his kids?
I was just going to say, Rachel, you took the words out of my mouth.
Because that is, like, the bullshit to end all bullshits.
Like, here's the deal. If you two got divorced tomorrow and you had to hammer out a 50-50 custody agreement, I'm not saying that you should. I'm just saying if that happened, you would not be asking him to make sure that the children ate when they were there. He would have to do it because he wouldn't have a wife to do it for him.
Yeah. He should be happy to step up to care for his family.
Right. So the fact that you're framing this right now as a request, like, honey, it'd be really nice, as if it would be something you would be grateful to him for doing, rather than an equal part of the work you two committed to do when you decided to have children together.
Mm-hmm.
This is not an ask. This is a
requirement.
This is like he's having his husband and father performance review. And he has been underperforming.
Yeah.
When you underperform at work, your boss does not gently request, hey, could you come in on time? I'd really appreciate it. Your boss says, I'm concerned about your timeliness. And if you don't step it up, there's going to be consequences.
Yeah. Just, and the question of fair is something you're using to try and justify your request outside of yourself. You're trying to say, is there some sort of objective measure of this much rather than, I need this.
Yeah.
I need this, and your needs and wants are sufficient.
Right. Hi, it's me, your wife. I feel undervalued. I feel like you don't think my job matters. I feel like I take care of everything. And I imagine you can point to, here is how much I have done for, like, helping the kids manage their schedule in the last month. Mm-hmm. And here's what you're doing. And it's not even close to equitable. And I'm not saying that we have to, like, keep on each other's asses every day, making sure it's exactly 50-50. But you are not doing your part. And when you point to your schedule and you show me your meetings, even though I know that your bosses are okay with you taking time off, what I hear is, you are my wife. You're kind of my employee. And I'm going to delegate stuff to you. And when you tell me that that doesn't work, and when you tell me that makes you feel undervalued, I kind of don't care. And I got to tell you, man, that's not what I want out of a marriage.
Mm-hmm. Well, here's the other thing. Like, oh, your schedule? So your work meeting is more important than your children. Your work meeting
so good,
is more
Rachel.
Important than your marriage.
Yeah. Just play Cat's Cradle real loud.
Seriously.
Well, and frankly, and just even say, like, I do not want to get into, like, a dick measuring contest of whose schedule is bigger.
Yeah.
I just don't. Here's what I need from you. I need you to step it up 35%. That's how much more of, like, the childcare I need you to take on.
Yeah.
Let's find a way to make that work. It's going to look different. You are not going to get all the stuff that you want. It is not going to look like the last couple of years have looked. You are not going to feel like the way that you used to feel.
Yeah.
And I just need you to know that that's fine, because the way that you were feeling like everything was running smoothly before came at the expense of my feeling like a valued member of a partnership.
For you.
Yeah. And I don't want that anymore. Because here's what I think you don't want, letter writer. I don't think you want this to keep happening, where at every opportunity, your own husband mommy tracks you and says, well, you already spend more time at home. Why don't you just switch to part-time? You know, now that you're part-time, why don't you just do all this other shit so that 10 years from now, you can't even stand to look the guy in the face, because all you feel like you are to him yeah. is a chauffeur, a maid, a cook, and a servant.
Yeah.
And to just say, like, that's not what I want for our marriage. Because, man, oh, man, if we go down that road, it's not going to end well.
Hi, Roger.
Yeah. Hi, Roger. Make him listen to the damn Roger letter. Not that he's going to have a mistress and not introduce the kids to him. I don't want to get, you know, too hyperbolic here. But, like, he is creating an environment that is so dependent on you making yourself smaller at every opportunity. And that's not to suggest that taking care of children is less important than working for a paycheck. But where he defaults to, I get what I want, and you do whatever it is you have to do to make sure our family life continues to run smoothly, yeah. because I'm just going to pretend like it doesn't exist.
Well, the thing, he's busier. Sorry, who's taking time out to take care of the kids? That's busy.
Yeah.
That counts. Like, it's not only work busy counts.
Yeah. And it's just like, I just don't buy that. He's busy because he chooses not to prioritize your family life.
Yep.
He could do it. He is capable of doing it.
Yeah.
And he's choosing not to.
The other thing is, like, you know, okay, some of these are scheduled and some of these are emergent.
Right.
Take both, man. Right. Like, schedule them. Schedule. You have a schedule.
Yeah.
You put things on the calendar. Put it on your calendar. You can schedule things.
Yep. And to just say, like, here's the deal. I get it. Nobody goes into work hoping that the basement is going to flood and they're going to have to rearrange their schedule. Neither of us delight in doing that. Sometimes it's going to happen. And I need at least half the time for that to be on you.
Yep.
And you're not going to like it. Guess what, man? I don't like it either. Nobody likes it. But that's part of what having a personal life and a family life necessitates.
Mm-hmm.
And if our kid gets sick, it's really important that we don't send a message that that's mom's job.
Mm-hmm.
Dad's just here to bring home money.
Yep. Daddy gets home and sits back with a scotch and you know, mom makes dinner every night.
We don't want that to be the message that your kids get. And frankly, like, your husband, I'm sure he's a good guy. I'm sure he doesn't want to be Roger. But the way that he just assumes you are happy to sacrifice your own life in order to make sure his runs more smoothly is just like, man, there's a lot of contempt in that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of contempt in that. And there's a lot of, why do I need my wife's life to be smaller than mine?
Yeah.
What is it about me that cannot see her as an equal partner with an equal right to make demands on my time the way that I make demands on hers? Well, listeners, if nothing else, I hope that I have convinced at least two or three of you to say no to something today. You know, just
seriously,
say no to something.
It's empowering.
Even if someone just asks, like, what's the time? Just say no. No, that's actually not appropriate. That's a misuse of your time. But just say no to something today, please. Push back. Take 5 minutes for yourself today, please.
Absolutely.
Unless you are Roger, in which case, do not take 5 minutes for yourself.
No,
I
never
do not give you permission
again,
to do this. If someone asks you for the time, you have to give it to them. Roger, you're on my shit list. Rachel, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you so much. It's been fun.
This was delightful, and I'm so glad that you came. And thank you for all your wonderful notes. I hope we get to have you back on the show sometime.
Awesome. It'll be fun.
Awesome.
All right.
Thanks for listening to Dear Prudence. Our producer is Audrey Dilling. Our theme music was composed by Robin Hilton. Don't miss an episode of the show. Head to slate.com/dearprudence to subscribe. Remember, you can always hear more Prudence by joining Slate Plus. Go to slate.com/plus to sign up. If you want me to answer your question, call me and leave a message at 401-371-DEAR. That's 3327. And you might hear your answer on an episode of the show. You don't have to use your real name or location, and at your request, we can even alter the sound of your voice. Keep it short, 30 seconds, a minute tops. If you're looking for more to listen to from Slate, why not check out If Then, a podcast about technology, society, and power. Every week, Slate's April Glazer and Will Aramis take you on a lively tour of the tech news that actually matters, from fake news in your Facebook feed to the algorithms that want your job to the Uber drivers who want a job with benefits. Subscribe to If Then wherever you get your podcasts.